Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
This is What the Heck with Mike Heck on MMAfighting.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Heck.
What the heck?
Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to a brand new edition of What the Heck on MMAfighting.com. I am Mike Heck. Hope everyone's having a great week. And since we are all fans of this crazy sport, there's a lot going on this week in our little bubble. Lots of events to watch. Titan FC is back tonight on UFC Fight Pass. Bellator is finally back tomorrow night. LFA has an event tomorrow night. And the UFC is back on Saturday with a 15-fight card, a 7-fight main card, headlined by Robert Whittaker taking on Darren Till. So we are sort of inching our way back to MMA normalcy, at least from an at-home viewership perspective. So there's a lot to be excited about this week if you are an MMA fan. And a lot happened in the sport last weekend as well, as we have a brand new UFC flyweight champion in Davison Figueiredo. He defeated Joseph Benavidez this past Saturday night. It was a completely dominant performance. He finished Benavidez in the first round. And the question always is, after these fights, who is next to keep this division moving along? Well, two of the possibilities for that title shot are going to join us this week on the program. Plus, we're going to give some love to last Wednesday night's event on Fight Island as well, because I feel like with some of these Wednesday night cards, it almost gets like lost in the shuffle in the aftermath. Like, we are excited about it that we get like three events in 8 days, and it's always great to consume that much content. But once the Wednesday night event's over, you have like 6 hours to celebrate it, and then it's already on to the next one. So it's almost like it gets sort of lost in everything else going on. But we're going to celebrate that a little bit this week on the program. So let's get right into this thing. I'm not going to really talk that much at all, except to the fighter. So let's run down the lineup. Wrapping up this week is Modestus Bukauskas. He is back on the program following his first round TKO win over Andreas Michailidis last Wednesday night in Abu Dhabi. It's kind of a wild ending to that fight with the elbows and the cage door. But we're going to talk to one of the bonus winners and one of the nicest guys in the sport coming off that big win at UFC on ESPN 13 later on in the program. Speaking of the flyweight division, Brandon Moreno, the assassin baby, is going to join us. He was watching the Figueiredo versus Benavidez title fight very closely. He thinks he is next. I personally think he is not next, or don't think he's next. That's more proper English, but I do tell him that in the conversation. How is he going to react to that? You'll find out. This is actually a lot of fun. That is coming your way a little bit later on. Before that, we're going to speak to the man that I actually think should get the shot. And listen, between Moreno, Askar Askarov, and the guest joining us a little bit later on in about 20 minutes or so, Alex Perez, all three of these guys have an argument to fight for the belt. But I'll sort of lay out my formula throughout the episode. Alex Perez is going to join us from Abu Dhabi. He's actually cornering Carla Esparza on Saturday night against Marina Rodriguez. Alex is going to state his case for the flyweight title in around 20 minutes or so. But kicking us off this week, the man who took a victory in the main event of last Wednesday night's event in Abu Dhabi, Calvin Kattar. He defeated Dan Ige, and honestly, I am fascinated to see what is next for him in this loaded up, yet somewhat log-jammed 145-pound division. So let's get to it right now. My chat with the Boston finisher, Calvin Kattar. All right, we have Calvin Kattar back on the show. He took a trip to Fight Island, competed in a main event against Dan Ige, and he comes back to Massachusetts with a victory intact. Calvin, good to see you, man. Congratulations. How are you?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Doing good, thanks. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. And I'm curious because You've been preaching the Patriots way for as long as I've been talking to you, Calvin. And even before you got into the UFC, you've been preaching the Patriots way for a long time. And even after the Patriots win, even when they win like 49-0, Bill Belichick goes up to the podium and is a very harsh grader when it comes to performances and what his team does. So I'm curious about how you graded your performance overall against Dan. How would you grade it?
I mean, I would say like a C plus to a B minus. Not bad. I mean, because you got the win, man. Anytime you can learn off a win, it's great. Just things that I could have done made it a lot easier on myself. Didn't really happen. But then again, there's good takeaways, bad takeaways. I was happy with the defense on the takedowns. And then, but busted up my hands a little bit, kind of mid-fight, and had to adjust a little bit with some elbows and knees later in the round. But would have liked a little more volume. But overall, like I said, got the job done.
Yeah, I mean, a win is the most important thing, and hindsight's a fickle beast. You can go back and watch the fight and be like, oh, I should have done this, I should have done this. But what would you have done differently if you had the chance?
Well, just like you said, too, I mentioned, you know, hey, just another maybe half inch or inch on that elbow against Jeremy Stephens out of the way. Maybe I don't break my nose. And then Rob's like, yeah, maybe you don't hit the chin. It's like, you know, so you either go here or there with it. I'm happy I got the win against a tough kid who's on a 6-fight win streak, you know, positive takeaways. And then anytime you get the win side money while learning a valuable lesson for the next one. And I still feel like my best fight, which is good. So, you know, taking on this next caliber of guys in the top five, I'll just need to perform at my best. And knowing that I've yet to do that is good considering I'm getting the job done and catching wins.
Yeah, I thought you won 4 of the 5 rounds. And I know Dan is not the easiest guy to fight, as you got to kind of see for yourself. He's very game. He moves a lot. He seems to be almost annoying to compete in the cage with based on his style and based on your style. Was there anything that Dan did that surprised you at all or kept you on your toes throughout the fight that you didn't expect in the buildup?
I just wasn't expecting to kind of jack up my hands mid-fight, but he did a good job, man. I thought he mixed it up pretty well. Early, he did a good job. And then towards the end, I was kind of getting the range down pretty well. But his 2 to the body, 3 up top caught me in the nose in the second round, which was kind of clean. And I knew we started the blood clock at that point. And I would have liked it to have been later in the fight. But since that point, I didn't really get tagged up there too much. And then, and like you said, we were able to get the job done pretty decisively. So take it.
How are the hands now?
Yeah, they are. It's kind of like the nose. They flare up every now and then. But aside from that, I feel great. Anytime I get the win, all the physical pain is over in the matter of time. It's just, you know, a couple of days, week, whatever. But that win lasts forever, man. It feels good.
So no breaks or anything like that?
No, thank you. I'm going to get checked tomorrow. But nothing that I felt in the past that would lead me to believe it's a break.
All right, that's good.
That's how I gauge it. I kind of gauge it how I've been like this before. It's been swelled up worse. And it wasn't broke then, so it can't be broke now.
Well, there you go. There's a positive.
Yeah, exactly. That's my professional opinion.
Dr. Calvin Cater. I love it, man.
So I need to get rid of that suspension. I'm good now.
There you go. What did you make of the whole Fight Island experience? Like, I know, you know, you and Rob and Tyson and your team, you guys took advantage of the racetrack and some of the cooler things on the island after you guys were quarantined. And I know I talked to Rob Font while he was quarantined. He's like, oh, I can't wait to get out of here, man. What was that all like for you once you got to get out of the hotel room for a little bit?
It was a lot of just getting there, just traveling with about 150 people, staff, fighters, things like that. Anytime you travel with a group, it's kind of, you know, a lot slower of a process. Doesn't matter if you're the first guy in the line, the last. We were kind of waiting for everybody in total anyway. So a lot of waiting, hurrying up to wait, which is similar to, you know, fight week feels. But it was good, man. They did all the safety precautions that they could do. I think we got tested about 5 times. So as far as the safety, that was good. We got quarantined 48 hours. That sucked. But at the end of the day, safety was paramount there, and I think they did a lot better job than when they had their first event that I competed for May 9th in Jacksonville. So all those things considered, it was good. And then we were able to go F1 racing, like you mentioned, in the 2-mile radius. And then we hit a little bit of jet skis, which was nice, but tough to know the red zone out there on the water. It's not too clear, you know?
Right.
we caused some good trouble in the first 15-20 minutes of that thing, and then called it a day. Didn't want to get too exhausted. I knew I still had a fight coming up within the week.
It probably felt good getting that water to splash in your face a little bit, though, because I heard it brutal out there.
Yeah, but even the water was hot, so you'd think it'd be more refreshing. But it was just kind of just getting on the jet ski, switching it up. And like you said, the journey's the destination, so you got to find points throughout the fight weeks when you can enjoy yourself a little bit. And then when we started the new week, which is fight week, that Sunday, Monday, we kind of dialed back, and then it was all fight week business stuff.
People kept talking about, and I know you were asked about it a lot, the pressure and the risk of taking a fight like that when you were ranked so much higher in the division. And, you know, I remember asking you about that, and you said you love the pressure. You love being a guy to help move this division along, since some of the other top guys hadn't been fighting at all. Do you feel like you accomplished that mission, that you gave the rest of the division a little bit of a warning? You better get in there and fight, or I'm going to start leapfrogging you guys.
Well, that's the plan all along, is to just be active and let the results speak for themselves. So, I find out, right now I'm kind of one of the only guys out there along with Dan, competing, and look, we got rewarded for that. We had a main event opportunity, and, you got to take those risks, man, in order to taste that greatness, you know, and you got to fight guys at 6-fight win streaks in order to get a main position spot. So in order to have these big moment opportunities, you got to take some risks. And, it was a calculated one on our end. We turned it up. I didn't really stop after the Jeremy Stevens fight, and parlayed that right into a big win against Ige. It was weird. It was the 15th back home and the 16th in Dubai. Abu Dhabi, I mean. You know what I mean? It was like I was living in the future out there.
I know your focus was on the fight and on Dan Ige, and I did ask you about this last time you were on to give your thoughts on Volkanovski versus Holloway, and you said you didn't care. You didn't even know if you're going to watch it, which, let's be honest, I didn't really believe you, Calvin, but did you watch the fight? What did you think of it?
I did watch it, but I really don't give a shit about watching anybody's fight. Like, I'm trying to be more involved in watching and things, but especially if you're on a card, like, I never really focus. It'd just be like, shit, I got to get ready for my fight, and then you never really know who's on the card, except now they're pretty big fights and you're kind of a fan at that point. But, you know, all throughout my career, just you focus on a date, you have a date in mind, you don't really know anything else other than you and your opponent, and that's like the main focus. But as far as you were saying with what on the back end, I'm sorry.
Oh, what did you think of the fight between Volkanovski and Holloway? Yeah.
So it's weird. I think that Max, you know, he controlled the cage the whole fight. I think if you judged it one round, you might have to give it a Max. He dropped him in the first and the second round, controlled the cage the entire fight. And that third round was real close. I have to rewatch it. But I think if you scored the fight as one big round, you might give it a Max. And the way it was, worked out, going to Volkanovski, you got to give him credit being down two rounds, the first two rounds, and coming back, winning the next three. It, no matter how close it was, that's championship medal right there, you know?
Yeah, I don't know how it is on your social media game. I don't see you being trashed a lot on social media, but I've never experienced anything like the reaction I got from saying simply that the fight wasn't a robbery, that Volkanovski winning wasn't
worse.
A robbery.
I've seen worse. I'll say that. But I mean, that's not really saying much either. If it's a broken system, maybe the long play is that they might work on the way they judge things or you know, just relook at it, because it's not perfect as it is at the moment. So it'd be nice if they revisit that a little bit instead of just talking everything post fight. I like if there's more transparency too in leading into the fight. Every round they should just show the total or what they have. Like, why have it so secret until the last round? It just seems weird. Transparency is the thing nowadays, right?
I know our producer Casey, who is listening to this conversation right now, is probably clapping and dancing. He's a big proponent of open scoring.
Why
and
not?
Seems like you are as well.
Yeah, why not? It's not going to hurt.
Oh, I agree. Maybe we can get that in combat zone once you guys get that up and running. Introduce open scoring.
You know what? That's a good idea. Just implement it, right? Be the change you want to see. I like that.
There you go. See?
I'd like to see a good idea. Yeah, maybe we could 100%. That's a good way of doing it.
There we go. The reason I really asked you about the last fight, and it's kind of crazy how things changed so suddenly for you, Calvin, because now you kind of have to look at these fights a little bit closer because you're getting up there. So it was a big fight for your future as well, because you're knocking on that door right now. Where does the win over Dan place you in this division overall? Like, are you there for Volkanovski now, or do you think you need another one, another two? Like, what do you think?
I think I can make it a bad day for him today, tomorrow, a couple months, whenever we step in there, man, I feel like I can level up to any opportunity presented to myself. But the longer they wait, the worse it's going to get, because I'm only getting better.
This is just one man's opinion, but actually there's a lot of people who agree with me. And let me just say, Calvin, if they offered you a title shot, it would be amazing.
Yeah,
but if they go in a different direction, I feel like the fight to make is you and Max. Like, I think it makes all the sense in the world. Like, who wouldn't want to see the potential striking battle that would ensue between the two of you guys? But I'm not the matchmaker. I know you're like a line them up, knock them down kind of a guy, but I feel like,
that'd be another me doing all these other contenders, right? I'd be doing them all another favor, fighting another guy that none of these guys want to fight. And I'm cool with everybody. I'll fight any one of these guys, man. It's just, it's funny how, you know, put me with any one of them and you know, we're getting a good fight, but these guys all want to, nobody want to fight Danny Ige, you know, 6-5, which, you know, nobody want to fight Zabit. Stevens is a dangerous fight for a lot of guys, and some people aren't looking for, you know, there's not a ton of upside with the risk on that one, but sign them all up, man. I don't care. Like I said, I wouldn't mind beating all these guys on the way to the belt. So this way, when I get the belt, they can't give me anybody new. I already fought them all. It doesn't matter to me. It's all the same shit. On the back end of everybody is that win side, that win money. And that's what I want in order to change my life and to do the things for the people that I want to do them for. So whoever's in the middle of me and that show money, that win money, sign them up. They're all getting the same treatment. I just want what's on the back end of a win over all these guys. And that's just, you know, better lifestyle for me and everybody I do this shit for. And so sign them up. Sign me all up. Anybody that makes the most sense, most money, let's do it.
Yeah, I think you and Max would be great. And I think you've also done the UFC a lot of favors along the way with the Zabit situation. You know, the Stevens fight is a tough fight. The Ige fight, taking that fight. I mean, they reward you with your new contract and they give you a main event spot, but still.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, I'll take it. I don't need nothing from nobody, man. Sign up. Okay. No favors. I don't want nothing. Go ahead. Give me the fight that nobody wants. Give me more chips, man. I don't care. Whatever. Sign me up. Cool. It just shows that, you know, mentality-wise, I feel like I'm different than some of these guys. I think they all want to talk about it. But I think a lot of them, when it comes down to it, you know, that mentality, I think that, or else, I don't know, unless these guys are busy competing during the pandemic. But I don't see much of them doing anything right now other than talking about it, you know?
Since this sport is a what have you done for me lately sport, true or false, you're the number one contender in this division right now.
That's what I'm saying. It is what it is. It's the what have you done for me lately. It's exactly how I see it. But if we're going by rankings and this and that, and what's fair, I mean, I might as well be talking about the ruling system and the judging system all over. We want to talk about rankings now? Man, that's why I don't get lost in all this shit. It's like, I try not to even talk about it because it's all a bunch of bullshit, right? And all what am I going to do? Get lost in the bullshit? Or am I just going to focus on the training? The only thing that pays dividends, you know, worry about the next meal, getting the right sleep. Because when these guys get cold feet or pull out of the fight or do something, you know, then someone's going to step in. And I'm that guy. I'm that guy that's, you know, it is what it is. I'm always ready. And this shit's got to be like that. It's got to be a lifestyle. And that's what pays the biggest dividends, man. Always being ready to go. So my next opportunity is going to be just probably whatever opportunity presents itself next that makes the most sense. Maybe a tough time saying no.
Yeah, we're in the middle of a pandemic, too. So that kind of makes things a little awkward and interesting in its own right.
But at the end of the day, man, what else is there to do, right?
That's true.
What else is there to do? I'm not going to keep beating the dead horse, but, you know, we could just be talking about it all day, or we can go out and just train and go out there and compete and earn our shit, earn our spots. And I feel like, I'm one of the only guys in the division doing that. But should the UFC want to go another way and reward someone who's just sitting back on their laurels, you know, then that's on them. I'll run in all these guys eventually.
That's true. When do you think you'll be ready to come back? Like, you want to be active, and the way things are trending, another trip to Abu Dhabi could be in your future for your next fight too. But I know you just fought a week ago, but, you know, when are you sort of looking at the old calendar? Any certain month or date circled up for you right now?
In the short term, I think I'm gonna be able to find out tomorrow with all the X-rays and things. You know, check off that once that's all said tomorrow. I'd like to just be ready for something. I'd like to jump in on a car with my teammate Rob Vaughn. I know he's coming back from being injured. That would be ideal if it was on my timetable, but if something pops up beforehand and we're ready to go, I'm always down for another you know, whatever we got to do, man. Now that I don't know money with this, I try to keep it minimum on here, man. Is this, where's this going? Are we swearing? I don't know, man.
You can say whatever you want. You've already broken that rule a few times. You're good.
I forget.
This is the internet, man. We're good.
All right, because I'm down for another fucking opportunity too, man. You know, whatever presents itself.
Now that you're back home, I mean, I know you're going to get checked out tomorrow and see where that goes from here on the short term. But, you know, what are you going to do? Like, Boston sports are coming back pretty soon. I heard you like to hit the golf courses from time to time. I know there's a lot of courses in the Boston area. Played two of them over the last two weekends. So what are these next couple of weeks going to be like for you back home?
I'm pissed I didn't get to hit the golf course in Abu Dhabi.
Too hot, man.
Yeah, but number one golf course in the Middle East. So I was like, right there. Anyway, back here, I'm looking to get a golf club in my hand as soon as I can hold one. Should be soon, probably another couple of days, but get on the links and stay in the gym. That's it. Stay in the gym and get on the links and be ready for another opportunity. Like I said, I can't do anything crazy physical, but there's always something we could do. And just trying to stay moving because you got a lot of good eating to do lined up around here. And I can't get that scale going the other way too far. You know, I got to keep momentum.
You have goals as a fighter. And I will say this, one of my goals as somebody in the media, one of my ideas is to a golf and talk interview with a fighter so that
let's do,
you
know, it.
Play some golf and talk. Like I want to do that one of these days. So now I'm putting you on the spot.
We'll do a cartel interview on the link. So I have to set that up.
I'm writing it in the contract that Tyson has to wear his hat backwards or I'm not doing it.
Muffin hat.
Yeah, he's gonna be so pissed.
We busted his balls, man, so much, me and Rob. Man, that's a riot. Whoever that was hysterical.
Yeah, that's just too funny. But congratulations, man. Great win, great performance. Big fights coming your way, it looks like, and looking forward to seeing what that is. Thank you. All the best to you, and enjoy time back in good old Massachusetts, man.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it, man. I'll talk to you soon.
There he is, Calvin Cater, everybody. I would love to see him versus Max Holloway next. Plus, we're going to try to get this golf and talk thing rolling soon. We'd love to make that happen. But Cater versus Holloway, I think that's the fight to make. It just makes all the sense in the world. You get those four other contenders rumored to be lined up against each other. And I say that's the direction they go. And Volkanovski should just hang out and wait and see what happens with this division. He's beat Max Holloway twice. We got four other contenders. That leaves only two guys, Cater and Holloway. I think that's the fight to make, and we could see who sort of separates themselves from the pack to fight for the title next. But speaking of the pack and getting towards a title shot, let's talk to our next guest, a definite fighter in the conversation to challenge Davison Figueiredo for the flyweight title now that we have a champion, Alex Perez. We spoke with him around a month and a half ago. He finished Juicio Formiga with a leg kick TKO in his most recent fight at UFC 250. So let's head to Abu Dhabi and check in with one of the top contenders at 125 pounds, Mr. Alex Perez. All right, we have Alex Perez back on the show, joining us from Fight Island in Abu Dhabi. And this past Saturday, a big fight at 125-pound division went down that had a lot of significance to this man, as Davison Figueiredo is now the brand new UFC flyweight champion. So I wanted to check in with Mr. Perez and see how he felt about all of that. Alex, how are you?
What's up, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great. How is Abu Dhabi right now? I hear it's not cool there.
It's hot, man. I actually just got back to the hotel from, because our hotel is like running right next to the racetrack. Like the racetrack passes by my room. So we got to actually go try it. And man, we did three laps. And I was sweating just being in the helmet. It's like, oh my God, I can only imagine being out there all day.
Yeah, and it's what, 10 o'clock at night there right now?
Something like that. I can't even remember. I'm trying to stay on California time, man.
Oh, there you go.
Trying to.
So it's like noon. So it's like noon in your own mind.
It's crazy because I'm going to sleep like at noon here and it's super sunny. I'm waking up like 6 p.m., 7 p.m., and I'm like, oh, my God, like I'm going kind of crazy. Like I'm used to be – I like seeing the daylight and stuff, but it's definitely a trip. First time traveling this far with this big of a difference, and it's different.
How long have you been there?
I've been here – man, I got here like 4 days ago, I believe. it's kind of hard to tell. They're all the days kind of blur together. You go to Vegas, stuck in quarantine, right? Then you literally fly out, and then you come straight here, and you're in quarantine for 48 hours. The only time you leave is to go do the second test. So it's 24 hours. Then you do a second test, and you're stuck for another 24 hours. And then you get like a, I think we got out like at 4 a.m. Like our time was like, holy shit, man. I've never been in a room, been so happy to walk away, you know, walk around the lobby. I've been walking around the lobby every day for like at least 10, 15 minutes.
So how long did it take? Would you say you guys are like acclimated to the time change yet, or you just probably won't? And, you know, once you get home, you have to kind of go back to where you came from, I guess, essentially.
It's because, so I'm trying to stay on California time because we fight, like she's on the main car. So she might around 4 to 5 p.m. our time, California time, but that's like 4 a.m. here. So it's kind of hard. So it's kind of like weird. Like if you try to adjust to your time, you're going to sleep at a certain time. You're going to fight in the morning. We fight Sunday morning. We don't fight Saturday night. It's just because we're adjusted to the time in the U.S. So it's kind of just weird. So I'm trying to stay California time because we're used to turning around that time anyway. So we're up and about. So yeah, it's just different.
So you're out there with Carla Esparza. She's going to fight Marina Rodriguez this Saturday at UFC on ESPN 14. And this date of the fight got switched around a little bit as we were getting closer and closer. But now that she's there and she's days away from this big fight, how has she been doing getting ready for a tough test in Marina Rodriguez?
She looks good, man. I mean, her weight's good. Always on point. Striking looking good. Her ground game looking good. Her wrestling's looking good. I mean, you know, it sucked that we had to wait an extra, you know, extra week and a half to fight, but it kind of benefited us a little bit too. You know, everybody's taking these fights somewhat on short notice with like a month camp, just gave us more time to work, and I think it paid off.
So let's talk about you, Alex, because Saturday night we saw Davison Figueiredo become the new champion. He defeats Joseph Benavidez in the first round. It was a dominant performance from Davison. I'm sure you were watching with bated breath, with your eyes wide open. What was going through your mind as this fight was all going down?
I mean, the fight result was what I thought, that Davison was going to win. I felt like Joe, the only way he can win is to drag it out five rounds and win by points. But it's a hard task to do when someone has knockout power like that, you know. And I was just, you know, I personally wanted Joe to win. Everybody thinks I don't like Joe. I really don't care for the guy. I mean, I don't know him personally. Fighting wise, I fucking hate the guy. You know, he beat me. If you don't hate the guy you lost to, or don't, you know, like that's the way I feel. But I wanted Joe to win because I wanted to fight him for the title and beat him, and win the title from him. That has been the best revenge for me. But I mean, I figured that Davison was gonna win, just has that knockout power. And like I said, Joe was gonna have to drag it out to five rounds unless he got him with the sub. Being in there with Joe myself, I don't feel that Joe, you know, like hits extremely like hard, like not like, you know, he did in WEC, you know, not like he hasn't really knocked anybody out one punch or anything, where Davison's doing that right now. So it was just going to be a tall task to ask to go five rounds with that guy and not get caught by one shot. You know, this guy has one shot. He's super accurate. It's kind of a hard thing to do. But, yeah, man, I'm glad that finally we have a champion. Now, you know, I answered a lot of questions, but now there's more questions coming up, you know, like about obviously who's fighting him next and stuff. And I was just excited to get a champion in. And, you know, gives me confidence that I just beat the guy, stopped the guy that he went three rounds with and he lost to.
Yeah, because, you know, you and I have been talking, I think this is probably like the fourth, fifth time we talked in the last year or so. And, you know, the narrative has been pretty similar. Your goal was to get up to that spot. If Benavidez was the champion, you wanted to fight him and win the belt back. That was the revenge. It's been the same thing you've been saying for a while. But was it a little bittersweet for you watching that fight on Saturday night? I mean, you're happy that now we have a champion, we can move this division forward. But was it a little bittersweet that Joe didn't win, so you don't get that fight right away?
Nah, you know what I mean? Like, I want to fight the best guys in the world, whether it's Joe. And Joe technically has a win over me, you know what I mean? So, not technically, he does have a win over me. So, Joe has a win over me. I'm a competitor at heart, man. I want to fight the guys that beat me, the next guy in line. I want to fight the next big thing, you know? That's my goal. I come into the sport to compete. You know, I'm not here to talk smack about people or anything. Like, I'm probably one of the people laugh because I'll come up to you and tell you exactly how I feel about you. If I like you or not, I'll tell you exactly what I think of you. And that's the way it is. And I'm not a person that talks smack, you know. So I want to fight the best guys in the world. It kind of sucked that it wasn't Joe, but at the same time, too, it's like, okay, he's not the best guy in the world. I want to challenge myself against the best. You know, he's one of the best, but I want to challenge against the number one spot. Everybody's goal in the sport should be to be a UFC champion or a champion in whatever organization they're in. So Davidson's the main guy right now, and that's what I'm looking for. That he, as soon as the fight was over, my attention was right on him. I was watching videos and stuff like that already. I'm already doing studying on those guys, you know, and I'm excited.
So you probably look at things a little differently because, you know, you're you and you're in this position, but I think most people are looking at this division right now as there's a 3-horse race here for the next title shot. You would be one of those guys. Brandon Moreno would be another. And then Askar Askarov is there after his win over Pantoja on Saturday night, the unanimous decision win. He looked great in that fight. But why do you feel like you should be the guy to get that next shot over those other fine contenders in this division?
So, you know, if I look at all three of our resumes, Moreno's fought Kai and Jacir, both decisions. I'm not saying they weren't exciting fights. So he went to decision twice with 2 ranked guys. I fought 2 ranked guys. It doesn't matter what they're ranked. I mean, I was ranked, you know, it was weird because I was ranked at 25s and I bumped up to 35s because they cut the division. I came back and I wasn't ranked. It was just a whole bunch of weird. So I started from the bottom and filled myself up. So, you know, I fought guys that were ranked. I beat 3 guys that are ranked at 25s. I beat Mark, right? And then I beat Espinoza that was ranked above me, and I finished Espinoza, and then I beat Jacir that was ranked above me. I finished Jacir. Askarov, he beat, he had a draw with Moreno. Then he fought Elliot, beat Elliot, which was ranked, and now he beat Pantoja, was ranked. Hasn't finished anybody in the last three fights. Same thing with Moreno. I'm not saying they didn't put exciting fights on. I'm saying I'm the one out there going finishing guys. So I'm not saying like they don't deserve it or not, but I feel like if you go by the last 2 to 3 fights, you go like we all had decisions in the first one. Then I had to finish. Those other guys had decisions, and I had to finish it in my last fight. And those are guys that are ranked higher above me, guys that are ranked above me. And I just feel like I'm finishing guys at 25s, and that's what people want to see.
I'm just going to lay my cards on the table here, Alex, and I'm going to be talking to Brandon a little bit later on, and I'm going to tell him exactly the same thing. I would give it to you, honestly. I think Askarov's on a good run. He'll have his chance soon enough. You and Brandon defeated the same guy in your most recent fights. Like you said, he won by decision. You won by finish, and a rare kind of a finish at that with the leg kicks. Not to mention, Brandon and Askar already have a story that isn't finished yet. They fought to a draw, and they fought not too long ago. I think the easiest and the fairest way to do it would be you fight for the belt. Let Brandon and let Brandon and Askar fight. Let them turn the page in their story. The winner fights either you or Davison. This makes the most sense to me, honestly. I think that's the best way to do it.
I mean, that's how I feel. I see people throwing out different names as well. I see them pulling out Kai, and like I've seen, like I think Below the Bell was putting out like Kai on there, and I've seen a couple other guys like a couple of other people were saying Cody Garbrandt said that he would want to drop down 25. It's like, look, man, first, like, Cody's not a 25er. He said he's going to drop down, but has he dropped down? No. So, like, people are like, first of all, you can't talk about it if he's never made the weight. I don't care what you do at home. It doesn't matter. I've seen people make weight at home and go in overweight somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, you have to step on the official scale and make weight and fight, I believe. Like, Aldo did it, and everybody thought Aldo won. Against Marlon Moraes, right? Like, you know what I mean? So they gave him the title shot. Cody has not dropped down. So, like, I don't know why people are even bringing up that name. Kai, he lost a fight to Brandon, beat Tyson. And we were scheduled to fight. And he didn't want to travel, which I understood. You know, it's COVID. Like, the whole thing, this was at the beginning, the whole COVID thing was going on. But he hasn't fought anybody ranked in the top 10. The one guy he did fight was Brandon in the top 10, and he lost to Brandon. So I don't know where they're getting Kai's name from. So, I mean, like I said, I feel like I feel my resume is probably the best one. I'm 6-1. I'm 5 or 6-1 in the UFC. My only loss was to Benavidez. Yes, I did get finished by Benavidez. I also did get headbutt. You know what I mean? The only difference is between me and Benavidez is that I didn't bitch about being headbutted and complain about, you know, going to a fight. I understand why he did it. This might have been his last shot to get a fight, you know. But if you go back and look at all his fights, he's not doing it on purpose. It's just the way he strikes. He leads with his head. It happens. You know what I mean? We're in a contact sport. I'm not expecting not to get hit. So, you know, I kind of just shut my mouth and just kept working. Eventually, like, I'm not going to call the guy out every time. You know, I wanted him to win so I can fight him. It didn't happen. So I feel like I'm the next guy in line for the Davison fight. I don't see no other way.
Have you been given any indication that you're next? Has there been any discussions about that? Like, I know the fight just happened on Saturday, but it was a quick one. I would assume the UFC is going to want to turn him around pretty quickly to defend this title. I feel like the division's got a little more juice behind it after watching a finish like that in a title fight. So has there been any indication that you're going to get that fight, or that that's the direction they may be heading here?
No, I haven't got anything yet. Like, for me, I feel like Davison's going to take a little break. I mean, he went through a lot, like the COVID thing and all this stuff. You know, he had to make the weight cut, the travel. So I don't know what they're going to do with him and how long they're going to wait to, you know, fight. But I'm down to fight whenever. Like, I tell people, like, I've made weight in 3 weeks to make 25. Sucks, but I've made it. You know, and it's a little bit easier now that California's kind of reshut down. No Korean barbecue, you know, so it's a little bit easier to make the weight. But like, I'm ready whenever, man. I stay ready. I'm in Fight Island. I'm training still, running, hitting pads. You know, we have Matt Salinas, one of our jiu-jitsu coaches here, and I'm rolling with him. I'm hitting pads with coach and I'm running. So I'm staying ready. You never know when the call is going to come. It could be the, you know, last minute. So I'm not taking this for granted. 2020 has been a great year for me. You know, and my athletic career and stuff, and I have big stuff coming up, you know, in my personal life. So it's going to be big.
Davison, obviously very powerful guy. You got to see it in the fight. It seemed like every time he touched Joe in that fight, he hurt him. It was just pretty crazy and pretty surreal to watch. How do you feel you match up with Davison from like an X's and O's stylistic perspective?
I feel good. I mean, I go forward, he comes forward. So it's going to be whoever backs up. I mean, power wise, I feel like he has a one punch knockout. I throw a lot of numbers. Size wise, I mean, I feel like we're about the same size. You know, I'm a big flyweight. I think he's a big flyweight. You know, so I feel like we match up well on the ground. I feel like I think I might have the edge in the wrestling, but his jiu-jitsu is no slouch, man. If you watch that first fight with Joe, that armbar he hit wasn't like just a regular basic armbar. He hit that on the fly and almost tapped Joe. So, I mean, I feel like it's a good matchup. I feel like it's going to be – if we were to fight, it would be fight of the night for sure, because just our styles makes it that way. Like, our pressure, our power, our speed, our strength, you know, our conditioning. Like, it's just – like, there's no way it can't be fight of the night.
I know that if the call comes and they say, Alex, we're going to book this fight in 3 weeks, you'll be ready. It's not a big deal for you, but – realistically, like, if you had to circle sort of a month or a day on the calendar, what do you think, like September, October might be a good lineup for that? You think it might happen a little bit later down the road?
I'm thinking maybe like the end of October, just because, like I said, I don't know what, like, I mean, with this whole COVID thing, it's kind of just messing everything up, you know? So like, I don't know how it is in Brazil. Like, I know he's from Brazil. I don't know how his living situation is, things like that. I don't know what they're going through over there. So I don't know what, like, you know, he came out and said that he had tested positive for COVID like a month before the fight or something crazy like that.
March, yeah.
Yeah, so he tested positive for it. So not knowing what's going to happen, you know, where he's at, like, we don't know what's going to happen. And then knowing that stuff, I would say like late October, the weight cut, the travel, stuff like that. I'm pretty sure he wants to spend time with his family, things like that. So, I mean, he deserves it. He's a champion. I would say like October. Like I said, I'm ready whenever the UFC calls me. I'm ready.
I think one thing I think technically in watching the fights from a viewership perspective, the flyweights are so fun to watch. Like, you can never go wrong. I think your division and Carla's division are like the two, when you see them, you can't go wrong. There's never a boring fight. It always works out. But for some reason, this division just isn't catching on, like, overall. Like, the fights are great. But I think one of the problems is, and this is not to like call out the UFC or anything, I feel like your stories aren't getting told enough, like on the broadcast or in the build up to the fight. Like there's things that I've learned about Davis Figueiredo in the last like 48 hours that I never knew about. Like I had no idea that he was like a hairstylist. I had no idea that he had like all these other things that he does behind the scenes, but they just didn't tell that story. So I think that's one thing they could do better to help build this division is, you know, not just have the great fights that we know we're going to see, but at least get to know you guys and what you guys do outside of the octagon as well. Cause I feel like of all divisions, this one isn't getting that love like some of the other ones. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I just feel like a lot of us in our division, I think all of us in our division, we don't go out there and talk smack. We're not going out there saying, hey, you suck. Hey, this, you know, we're not talking about people's religions, team, what you've done, you know, who you're hanging out with. Like when do you see any flyweight do that really? You know what I mean? There's no one in our division, and it's not business wise, it might be a bad thing, but I feel like we're doing what we're supposed to do. We're martial artists, you know, we respect each other, respect everybody. Second, I think people think bigger is better. Like, you know, like in America, people think bigger is better. People like watching heavyweights fight. I mean, no disrespect to heavyweights, but after the first round, I'm like, God, this is horrible, man. Like, guy can't make it. You know, they're not all heavyweights. Some, you know what I mean? Like, come on, Francis Ngannou, Derek Lewis. Come on now. They threw four punches. I threw four punches in the first 20 seconds of a fight. You know what I mean? So some people don't understand the sport. Some people people don't understand like the scrambles, things like that. People just think, oh, they don't know what they're doing. You can't knock anybody out. It's like, yeah, but I feel like the lighter weight guys from 45s, 55s, 45s, 35s, 25s, you know, even the lighter guys in Japan and stuff are probably some of the most technical guys you ever see compete in the sport. Just because, yeah, we might not have the knockout power, but we have to do things the right way. It's not like we're going to be able to explode and use our strength against everybody.
It's a good way to look at it. I just think they could do a better job of like telling stories. I mean,
yeah, that too. I just feel like it's just, you know what I mean? It's because none of us talk. None of us really like talk. So I feel like it's kind of like, they want to push what sells, you know what I mean? It's a business. I don't understand that, you know? So they're just trying to like, oh, you're selling like, oh, okay, this guy's talking smack about this guy. Let's hype this up, you know. And that's cool. It's business. You want people to watch. You want people. That's how they make money, and that's how they pay us. So I mean, it sucks, but at the same time, too, it's better for me. I hate media.
Yeah.
No offense. No.
It's funny because you're wearing a Contender Series T-shirt right now, and the UFC obviously has a big part of the Contender Series, and we don't know any of these fighters until the night of the fight. Like we see they'll post the card on the broadcast, but until the actual fight night, we don't really know anything unless you're a hardcore fan like myself. Like I've been following a lot of you guys on the way up, but the stories they tell before you fight, like it makes people care right away. It's just simple things, 2 or 3 minutes. You're just like, holy crap. Like this guy went through all that to get here.
Yeah.
What a difference that makes. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I think it's just easier when it's, I mean, you got the Contender Series is what, 5 fights, so 10 fighters. On a card, it's 12 fights, 24 fighters, plus the TV time. Plus, I mean, they're on Fight Pass, so they get a little bit more control of what they're doing. When they're on ESPN, like, hey, cut it, let's go. I remember being out there like, oh man, like the one thing I love about the UFC, if there's no disrespect to any lower promotion, is that they're on time. Hey, you're walking out in 5 minutes. Hey, you're walking out in 2 minutes. Hey, you're walking out. Like, oh you know. Other promotions, like when you're doing venues, you're kind of like, all right, let's go. Okay, you might be here, you might be here, you might be this, you might, you know, I know there's swing bouts sometimes. Hey, you're gonna be the fifth fight of the card. Oh wait, you're gonna be at the very end. Oh wait, you might gonna be here, you know, just so different. So I feel like just the timing of a show is kind of what kills a lot of the storytelling, where like Fight Pass, you got, you know, as much time as you want. You own the Fight Pass, so you can do whatever you want on there.
Yeah, I think they're on ESPN Plus now, but still, it's still a streaming platform. Yeah, but you have an answer for everything, don't you, Alex? It's just unbelievable. I don't like media.
Too long.
Chances are, like, if you are next and they book this fight in like late October, chances are it's probably going to happen in Abu Dhabi. Like, just the trends of everything. You know, I don't think anybody from Brazil could travel to the U.S. as we speak right now.
Yeah.
So chances are it's going to happen there. I'm sure it doesn't matter to you, but are you excited for the chance to head back to good old Abu Dhabi and do this all over again for yourself this time?
Yeah, man. I mean, we'll see how it works, because I bring out my nutritionist. You know, we'll see, because they cook for us here. They have everything served. So I bring out perfected athletes. You know, people are like, well, they can't. I was like, hey, man, she got to be here. That, you know what I mean? Like, that's my secret weapon, perfecting athletes. They get my weight down, you know. And just excited. It'll be exciting to fight here. You know, I would like to come early. I mean, the one thing that sucks about being here is that we can't leave, man. I want to ride a camel, do stuff like that. I heard they have a good water park, that Ferrari World, all shut down due to COVID. I mean, I understand, but yeah, man, I'm excited to fight. It's cool that I get to come out here early, like for Carlos' fight, I get to come out here and check it out and kind of see what we're dealing with. So it's kind of cool, you know. So when it's my turn, I know exactly what's going to happen, exactly what we're going to do. I mean, kind of same thing before I found the UFC, I went to help people like Joe and Carla and them. So I got to see them sign the posters from the walkout to the, you know, all the interviews and stuff. And I was like, when I got there, it felt like, oh man, like, okay, I already know what to do. I've been here 100 times, you know? So it's kind of cool. Just excited to get back in there, honestly.
I bet, man. I think this is the fight to make. And I hear Figueiredo saying he wants to fight Cejudo and do all this stuff. Like, no. We don't need to do that. Let's just, this division needs to shape up here. Come on. You fighting.
I mean,
you go ahead. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. If Cejudo like actually is coming back and he like says like, hey, he's going to stay at 25s, and okay, I can see that, you know, like he's a champion. He was a champion. He vacated it. But if not, then, just, I mean, honestly, when I see him tweet, I'm like, dude, just shut the fuck up already, man. Like, get out of here. You're retired, man. Like, it's like, cool. Like, enjoy retirement. Like, we get it. You were the best at one point in time. You were the best. So you're not the best anymore because you're not the champion. Like, that you let that go when you decide to vacate the titles. You got new champions. So, I mean, kind of one of those things. But I'm down for whatever, man. Title fight. If I have to fight one more, I have to fight 10 times more. It is what it is. I'll get my title either way.
If you don't get the title fight, you and Joe B, because it says he's got one more left in him, perhaps. So, what do you think?
I mean, I would love that fight too. Like I said, whatever the UFC wants, I'm a company guy, man. I don't say no to fights. I'm down for whatever.
See, she's giving you options, Alex. That's all. I know you don't like media, but we're trying to give you some options here. But before I let you go, man, what's sort of the message for everybody? What's the message for Davison, the fans, people watching right now, the UFC? I know you're not the kind of guy to be like, please give me a title shot, because you don't strike me that way at all. But what's the message for everybody?
Ah, man, just that I'm coming. Eventually, I'm going to be champion, whether it's the next fight, the fight after that, the fight after that. I'm coming for that title, man. I worked hard. I worked my butt off to get here. You know, everybody has a story. Everybody has sacrifices. I'm not saying I've sacrificed more than anybody else, but I know my work ethic. I know the team I have around me. And just look by my fights, man. I've gotten better and better every time I've gotten out there. I don't think any one of my fights have ever been the same. I've had decisions. I've had finishes, submissions, knockouts, late kicks, TKOs. You know, I'm all over. I'm only getting better. I'm coming to win this title. It's my future, is my goal. I have it on my board every day I wake up. I see it, you know, title shot, champion, 2020. So whether or not, if people don't like it, I'm coming for it.
Appreciate the time very much, Alex. All the best to Carla and the rest of the team out there. Safe travels back to the States, and best of luck in getting that title shot, man. You know where I stand. I think you're the guy. So
thanks, man. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Could Alex Perez be next? Certainly has the resume for it, and considering the rest of this conversation, as you'll hear, and you probably just heard as well, I think it makes the most sense to have Alex fight for the belt, and then you match up the other two guys in the discussion, one of which is going to join us on the program right now, and that is Brandon Moreno, who might not be thrilled with me when I tell him the same thing I just told Alex and just told all of you, but always enjoy chatting with the assassin, baby. Let's get to that right now on What the Heck. All right, Brandon Moreno is here, as you can see, the number 3 ranked flyweight contender in the world, and now there is a champion in the division to contend against. Brandon, good to see you, man. How are you?
Man, thank you so much. Thank you so much for the time, for the space. Nice to talk with you again.
Absolutely. First off, before we get into any fight stuff, How are you doing? How's everybody doing during this crazy time in the world, the pandemic? How has everyone been doing during all of this?
My family and I, we're still in quarantine. You know, I go just to the gym to train, just me. And then I come back to the house and stay here all day. So it's a hard time for us, but we are fine.
So you've been quarantined this whole time outside of just you going out and training every day?
It's because even if we want to go to some place, the place is closed. Here in Tijuana, the restaurants and different places start to open the place, but now start to close again. So it is what it is.
What's crazy is before the UFC went to Jacksonville and then the Apex, and now they're in Abu Dhabi on Fight Island, you were on the very first card with no fans at that Brasilia event, and you got the win over Juicier Formiga. I know we spoke not long after that event, but is it kind of crazy to think about that it all started with that event, your last fight, right?
I think in that moment for me was good because I went to Brazil. I think every people in the arena start to, you know, scream like, hey, ooh, I'm okay, and all that stuff. And for me, that time was very, very good. I think about that moment was just for Miga and me, and that's it. Just the corners. Even Michael Bisping start to talk about the fight. So what's crazy, but it was a nice experience.
It's funny because once the Jacksonville event started, we were hearing that the fighters could actually hear all the commentators, and some were getting advice and hearing Daniel Cormier like do the broadcast. They're like, oh, that's a great idea. Let me do that. So you could actually hear the commentators as you were fighting as well.
Not very clear, but you know, some words, some conversation between the broadcast. Was crazy. I mean, nothing important, I think, to be honest, but it was nice last start to hear Michael Bisping, and I don't remember who more was in that moment there, but yeah, it was nice.
So let's talk about it, Brandon. Saturday night, Davison Figueiredo officially became the UFC flyweight champion. It was an incredible performance over Joseph Benavidez, finished him in the first round. What did you think to yourself as you're watching it all unfold on Saturday night? What's going through your mind?
No, I mean, was sad for me because to be really honest, I love Joe. I mean, for me, Joe is my coach. He's always my coach. Actually, when I talk with him, he's always my coach. Never I say Joe or something like that. It's, hey, coach, how you been or something like that. So what's sad for me, watch all this moment, the post-fight interview, you know, because I want to watch Joe, I want to watch the success. But at the same time, I mean, Figueiredo, I don't have any relation with Figueiredo, and I can fight against him really easy. I mean, tomorrow, or the next week, if necessary. So, I mean, it was hard because... Yes, Davison Figueiredo was very dominant in that fight with his right hand. He has a lot of power with his right hand. He looks very strong. He looks powerful. And, I mean, it is what it is. Davison looks great. But, I mean, I think I deserve the next fight for the title. And to be honest, I'm not scared at all.
So it was kind of like a bittersweet thing for you watching Davison, because it's probably better for your career and better for you to see Davison win. You know, you could just focus on a fight with a guy that you don't really have a relationship with. But at the same time, you didn't want to see Joseph lose, especially in the way that he did.
Yeah. I mean, and it's like 50-50 the moment, you know, sad for Joe because I love Joe. I want to watch Joe the success, but at the same time, just say that. I don't have any relation with the guy, so I can stay focused in the fight to get the fight against Figueiredo.
Is that how you expected the fight to play out? Did you think Davison would win, or did you favor Joe to win?
To be honest, I thought about the fight, and I think Joe can be more in the fight, you know, like different game plan. I don't know, but was weird because the right hand he connected in this fight was the same right hand than the first fight, you know? So maybe Joe can't make any change in this training camp for Figueiredo, so that was weird. I know Figueiredo looks impressive, very dominant. I don't saw a fight like that.
Once the fight ended, are you just immediately thinking, all right, this is my next opponent. Yep. I'm fighting this guy for the title in my next fight.
And I have right now, I have a campaign in social media, more in Instagram, because I don't like too much Twitter, for example, because Twitter is a lot of hate, a lot of bad feelings there in that social media. But I love Instagram, and I know a lot of people go to that social media, and I put, you know, my post in my Instagram. A lot of people start to post and comment my post, and I love that. Actually, in the social media from UFC in Spanish, they put something like, hey, who deserves the next fight for the title against Figueiredo? And it's like option A, Brandon, or Askarov, or Alex Perez, or Henry Cejudo. And all the people started to tag me. So I feel amazing in that moment. I put some screenshots in my histories, Instagram histories, and I feel very happy for all the people, for all the support, for all the love. So the campaign is still going, and I can talk with you and make a good post. So that's it.
There you go. So like you said, it's kind of a three-man race right now, seemingly, on who's going to fight for the belt next. It's you, your old buddy, Askar Askarov, and then Alex Perez. And I actually spoke with Alex Perez a little while ago. Obviously, he's never going to say, oh, give it to Brandon. Give it to Brandon. No, he thinks he's the guy. He believes his resume is better than your resume. It's better than Askar's resume. So let me ask you, you have a lot of fan support here, but why are you the guy to fight Davison for the belt next over those two other guys?
Because, for example, I think the stronger name here is Askarov, but I beat Askarov in Mexico City last year. Every people watched that fight and saw the same result. Actually, the UFC talked with me after the fight, and they say something like, hey, no problem. And we know you won that fight, so you relax. Don't problem with us. So the next one, Pantoja, he lost. He lost against Askarov, so he's out to the conversation right now. Alex Perez, he fought against Formiga and beat him really good. Amazing fight, obviously. But I think I have better names in my career in the UFC. You know, Alex Perez fought against Mike De La Rosa, and I don't remember other names. And it's fine, but I beat Dustin Ortiz. I beat Luis Smolka in the best time in his career. I beat Formiga. So I think I have better names. And Cejudo is retired, man. I respect Cejudo because, you know, two times champion in flyweight, in bantamweight. But I think he's retired now, so he's out to the conversation automatically.
I'm going to be an open book, Brandon. All right. I'm going to be honest with you because I've said it a few times already. But if I were the matchmaker, as it looks right now, I'm giving the shot to Perez. I think he's earned it. I think you all have an argument for it, but he's got the recent performance against Formiga, who you beat as well. But Alex did finish him in the first round. Winning streaks are pretty much the same. Plus, for me personally, I thought you won the Askarov fight. But I want to see it happen again so we could close the book on it. You know what I mean? Because when you see draw, it just, even though I think you won, it's still not enough for me. So I didn't want to say like one thing to Alex and then like have you come on and not say the same thing to you. Full transparency, Brandon. Am I a horrible person? Am I a terrible human being for saying this to you?
Bye-bye. No, man, no, I understand. And it's obvious. Every single people in the division has his own arguments to, like, Alex Perez, like Askarov, maybe Pantoja still have some argument. But, you know, it's weird. because against Formiga, I go to the decision with Formiga, but I have all the fight with me. You know, I want the rounds. I put all the pressure on. I connect the best punches. So my fight was, I had more experience in that fight than Perez, because I know it was dominant and put pressure and beat Formiga in the first round for his left leg, I think so. I don't remember good, but I don't know. I think it's in my side, brother. Sorry.
Listen, no, but I will also say that I have said multiple times that by this time next year you will be the champion. So whether it happens, whether you get the next shot in a month or you get the next shot at the end of the year or early next year, by the time this next year comes, the same date, you're going to be the champion. I've said that. But luckily, when it comes to the matchmaking, it does not matter what I think, Brandon. It means nothing. It matters what the UFC thinks. And it doesn't hurt to have the champion on your side, which it looks like he might be, because you did tag him in a post on Instagram. You got the response you're looking for. He said, be prepared to fight me in November. What did you think of that?
What's so funny, because the guy tried to tag Mick Maynard and put Mickey Gall. Oh, man, that moment was so funny. But hey, I have the answer from the champion. We have a deal for November, so maybe. I mean, I need to let my manager and the matchmaker start to talk between them. And I hope in November we have a some good fight and some good news for us.
I assume you're okay waiting four more months to fight for the belts. Like, you don't care if you take another fight in between there.
Yes, because before this moment, I fall like four times in 1 year. So I think it's good for my body, for, you know, to rest a little bit, keep the training going. But you know, the training for a fight and the training just to learn something more is different. So I think it's good for me.
What if they offered you a different fight with Perez or the return match with Askarov, and they said, listen, Brandon, one more fight, you win this one, your next fight's for the belt no matter what. Would you consider either of those fights, or are you going to wait until it's a title shot?
I said it before. I know it's a possibility to fight against, I don't know, the rematch against Askarov or the fight against Perez, because I respect all these guys. They are amazing. They're amazing. Obviously, for me, it's better to put pressure for the fight for the title, you know?
Right.
I need to watch all my ways, my possibilities, and let's see.
It's crazy to think about, because at this time last year, you're not even in the UFC. Like, you had just fought for LFA. You got to finish over there, and then you had your comeback fight in September. Like, what a crazy year this has been for you. Is it really? Like, from not being in the UFC to knocking on the door of a title shot in less than a year is pretty wild.
Man, it's part of the journey. You know, when I lost again Perez and when I lost again against Pantoja, man, that moment was so sad for me. I was very disappointed of my performance in both fights. But I talked with my man, with me, and with myself, and it's just try to learn, and it's part of the journey. Right now, I'm a different fighter. You saw my last performance against Formiga, against Cara France, against Askarov, and you can see a different level fighter than the last performance against, for example, I don't know, Pantoja or Perez, or even against Ortiz. I beat Ortiz, but it was a hard fight. So it is what it is. It's part of the journey, and I'm very happy right now to be part again to the best organization of mixed martial arts. So let's see what's happening in the future. But I love to get some lessons to the life in the life.
Yeah, I remember the last time I talked to you, and I think you told the same thing to my colleague Alex K. Lee, that, you know, before you were just Brandon Moreno fighting, but now you've tapped into this assassin baby character. Like, once you get into the cage, it's like a totally different person. Like, did that happen like right before the LFA fight, and then just that's you're able to flip that switch from now on?
Yes, And everything was because I don't want to go again to the that kind of hold, you know, like go out to the UFC and start to money problems with family problems. Man, that makes me so angry in that moment. And some guy inside of me start to fight. And I say the same right now. It's not Brandon Moreno fighting. It's, you know, El Bebe Asesino. It's the assassin baby fighting right now.
Well, I'm glad you didn't go all assassin baby on me when I said Alex Perez should get the title shot. I appreciate that very much. But what's the message? What's the message for everybody in the division, right? For Davison, the fans, the UFC brass. What's the message for all these folks now that there's a champion and then now this division can move forward officially once again? What's the message for everybody?
Man, damn. Be careful with me. Be careful with me because I'm so hungry. I feel on fire right now. All the moment is in my side. So, man, thanks to all the people for the support in social media and with all the people in the streets, you know? So, let's see. This, I know this year was crazy with all this, with the COVID-19, but I'm ready. I'm ready to make history. The first Mexican to the first 100% Mexican to get a title shot. So it's really important for me, but for my country, it's very, very important. I know, for example, in United States, you have a lot of guys, man, a lot of guys in the UFC. And so if some guy go for the title, it's like, oh, nice, it's fine. But for Mexico, it's another thing. It's crazy, the situation. So it's important for me. It's important for my family and for my country. So be ready for me.
You're selling me almost, Alex. I'm this close to changing my mind.
you love Alex Perez, bro. You love Alex Perez. It's fine. He's a nice guy. He's a nice guy.
I know. Couple more things we let you go, because I know you do some work for the UFC, you do some analyst stuff, so I want to ask you about a couple of the big fights coming up and get your opinion on that, if you don't mind.
Okay, nice.
Okay, main event on Saturday, Whitaker versus Till. What do you think? What do you think?
Man, I am a excellent analyst in Spanish, but in English, it's hard for me. But It's a good fight in the middleweight division, you know. Darren Till looks good against Kelvin Gastelum in his last fight, but I need to watch a little bit more for him in the middleweight division. It's different. It's different power. They start to talk about about Romero and a lot of different guys, you know. Borrachinha is amazing and he's stronger, but Robert Whittaker has, you know, he's a former champ. It's a good fight for Darren Till because I think he's not in his best moment. So I think it's a huge opportunity to Darren Till to get the win.
And then last one before we let you go, heavyweight title coming up in a few weeks' time at UFC 252. Daniel Cormier, final fight of his career. He's going to challenge Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title. I get goosebumps just thinking about that. Daniel Cormier's last fight. Could be Stipe's last fight, too. Heavyweight title on the line. This is what the sport's all about, man.
Man, I am a huge fan to Daniel Cormier. So when he fought against Miocic and he lost, was very sad for me. I think the first round was amazing for Cormier because he take Miocic down. I think it's the key to this fight for Daniel Cormier. I'm with Cormier. I love Stipe. I love his boxing. He's amazing. But I'm with Cormier in this time.
It'll be fun in the smaller cage, too. That's just going to make things really interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, buddy. But it's great job analyzing. See, you can do this, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Let's get this guy some more work. Come on. Before he fights with the belt.
Full ESPN.
Well, it's coming, Brandon. Big things are coming your way. I'm convinced of that. So thank you for the time.
Thank you for your time again.
Absolutely. All the best to you in getting that title shot, Brandon. Maybe it's because Brandon Moreno is just such a happy-go-lucky guy, or maybe just because it was later in the evening than I'm accustomed to doing these interviews, but I laughed a lot. There was a lot of laughter in that conversation with Brandon Moreno, and he makes some very good points. And again, like I said at the top of the show, if they give it to Moreno, if they give it to Alex Perez, if they gave the title shot to Askar Askarov, I'd be all right with that. Now, if they give it to somebody else, if they give it to Cody Garbrandt, I mean, that's a bigger fight, honestly, because Cody's a bigger name, but if we're going to try to make this division happen and develop it and try to move it back up to where we want it to be, you can't just keep bringing guys up and down. Let's just give these guys in the division title shots. We have three legitimate contenders right now in this division, so I hope one of those three gets it. I do favor Perez because I want to see sort of an ending to the chapter between Moreno and Askarov. They fought to a draw. I think everybody and their mothers and fathers all thought Moreno won that fight, but when you look at the records and in the book, it says it's a draw. So from a storyline perspective, and I think Perez has done enough with his most recent win over Formiga, especially with Moreno, who also beat Formiga. He got a decision win. It was a pretty dominant one. But Perez finished him in the first round. I think Perez gets the shot. You match up the other guys. Winner of that fight fights the winner of Figueiredo versus Perez. So there's a lot to think about here. A lot of pieces of this formula as we move ahead to our next guest. One of the $50,000 bonus winners from this past Wednesday night's event in Abu Dhabi, UFC on ESPN 13, defeated Andreas Mikulaitis. Let's check in with just one of the nicest guys you will find in the sport of mixed martial arts, Modestus Bukauskas. All right, we have one of the big winners from last Wednesday's UFC on ESPN 13 event back on the show. Modestus Bukauskas picked up a first-round TKO win over Andreas Mikulaitis. Seven wins in a row, seven finishes in a row for this man. Congratulations, Modestus. How are you?
Yeah, thank you so much, mate. Yeah, doing real well. It was nice to get out there on Fight Island and pick up a big win. So, that's it now. To be honest, I just can't wait till the next one.
Yeah, that was some performance, man. You've been visualizing that first UFC walk, that first UFC fight for a long time now. Did it live up to the expectations?
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, listen, it probably surpassed it by quite a long mark. I was always, sort of visualizing, like I say, the walk into the octagon, like, as they started releasing more photos and stuff like that, I started like imagining what it'd be like. And it was, like I say, it just completely blew me away. Like the way that the UFC treated all the fighters and, how they carried out the whole event was absolutely amazing. I couldn't really have asked for anything better. So, it was crazy, like I say, when you're thinking about it in your head and then it actually happens in reality, like everything that you've just been dreaming about for all these years finally comes true. And it was amazing to finally go and live it out. And like I said, I just can't wait to keep living out even more.
It was crazy because when we do this show, we pre-tape the interviews, and we did an interview right before the fight and we talked about you fighting Vinicius Moreira. And then it was like maybe a day, maybe two later that we found out that he was out of the fight and that the UFC was looking for a new opponent. When were you made aware that Vinicius was out and that we're going to have to find a replacement for you?
Literally, I got a text, probably like a day or two later. And they told me that Vinicius had pulled out, but they didn't say why just yet. And then I saw, again, it was probably a couple hours after I found out, or like the next day, they said that he tested positive for COVID and stuff. And then, at that point, I didn't know what opponent I would get or anything like that. They didn't give me any options or anything like that. My manager, again, came up with a name. We said, yeah, and that was pretty much it. So everything was quite smooth, though. As soon as I found out that I didn't have an opponent already, within like a couple of hours leading into my next day in terms of American time, everything was already sorted. So like I said, the UFC handled it very well and got everything sorted really with quite a lot of haste, really.
Did you know much about Andreas at all heading in? Did you have to change a lot? I mean, I know you didn't have a lot of time to make a ton of changes, but did you have to make some sort of adjustments on your game plan of what you were going to do?
Not necessarily. All we knew was that he was a much more all-rounded opponent. He strikes a lot better than Vinicius would. On the ground, they're probably, I'm not sure exactly how good Andreas was on the floor. I knew that he was a black belt. I knew he was good and stuff like that. And I knew he had, you know, decent wrestling as well. So really, we just knew that we had to prepare for a more all-rounded opponent. But as I say, you know, all the skills are sort of picked up during quarantine and stuff like that, just preparing for any opponent. It just sort of just played into the fight really well. Like I said, I'm always trying to improve every area. I think the fact that we work so much on takedown defense and jiu-jitsu defense really paid dividends for me in the fight.
What was the Fight Island experience like for you as a whole? Because it seemed like when you were talking with John Anik after the win, you were quite impressed with the whole thing. What did you make of it? What were some of the things that stuck out to you once you got off the plane and got out of quarantine and got to check out the island a little bit?
It was absolutely amazing. Like I say, I didn't have it too bad in quarantine. You know, like my dad was in the room with me and, you know, we pretty much got to train like, you know, our sessions every day anyways. And, you know, like I said, having my best friend in my room with me, it was all right. But yeah, like once we managed to get out and everything and you know, like sort of stretch our legs and stuff and, you know, got to see like all the stuff. Like I said, the UFC just takes care of fighters on a whole nother level. I mean, Cage Warriors done done well to take care of fighters, but this isn't like a complete, like on a whole different planet in terms of how well they sort you out. They had all the nutrition sorted, they had physios looking after you all the time, and you know, they really want to make sure that their athletes can perform at the highest level. And not only that, I mean, just the scenery and stuff like that. I mean, but listen, I was only able to really go out and walk for like one day because I don't know what it was, but like literally out in that 40 degree heat, I don't know how humid it was. We thought, oh yeah, it's only a mile to the beach, you know, we'll take a nice little stroll, we'll get there in no time. It was like literally like probably there's one of the dumbest things that we could have done was actually walk in that heat. Like I was sweating my butt off, like literally within the first like 5 minutes. And then it was like really getting to me. And then, you know, then that's when we're like, all right, listen, we're taking the coach on the way back. There's no way we're walking. But like, you know, like I say, everything was like absolutely spectacular. Like I say, just the scenery and stuff like that and all the different places that they had out there. Even just the hotel room in itself was like an experience. Do you know what I mean? Having that 5-star treatment, you know, people come into your room and stuff like that. I've never had that before. So even just calling up room service was an experience for me in itself. Obviously, I feel like I probably could have enjoyed things a little bit more or done maybe some more excursions and stuff like that had it not been for, you know, my knee. I felt like it was... you know, I think at one point, like I started not feeling so good, like in terms health wise, like, you know, I started getting like, you know, shivers and stuff like that. But then after 2 days, it sort of went away. So I was quite lucky in that sense. But like I said, had I not felt that way, like obviously I thought, well, maybe it's better for me just to chill in my room. So had I not done that, maybe I could have been able to experience something else. But in terms of the actual whole experience, like even like, you know, going into the arena and stuff like that, and how everything was handled, it was absolutely amazing.
How's the knee feeling right now?
It's getting much better now, thank you. I just got on a course of antibiotics. So it seems like the swelling's going down quite a lot. Much more so than it was when I was literally just icing it for like the 2 weeks before the fight. So it's taking shape now. Like now it's the pain's going away and stuff like that. And you can see the mark where it may have been infected is going down. So it's got all going in the right direction. I reckon hopefully within maybe like another week and a bit, I'll be back into normal training. Everything will go on as normal.
It was really interesting watching your post-fight interview with Anik because I've known John for a while and the quarantine has made him a little more popular because he's rocking the John Anik mustache, which has become just a huge trend. And you're rocking the facial hair yourself, which is a little weird to see, Modestus, because we've done a lot of these interviews and every time we've talked, clean shaven, you got the baby face thing going on. What's up with the facial hair?
Well, do you know what? I remember I actually shaved it all off because mainly it was an influence from like my girlfriend and like, you know, I asked my mum as well, like, what do you think of it and this and that. And they said that it looked a bit better when it was like a little bit shorter. So what I'll do, I have like a little trick. Like every time I had like a couple of days leading up to something or leading up to seeing or doing whatever, I'll shave it all off. So I'll be like a baby face for like maybe 3 days or whatever. But now, you know, obviously I'm putting that miracle grow on my face and now it's starting to come up a lot quicker. And so within like 3 days, I start getting the stubble, and then that's when it like sort of looks the best. And so I was gonna have that same sort of tactic going into my fight week, so I kind of like let it grow out a bit longer. But then I just couldn't be bothered to shave it, man. Like I was just literally at the point where I'm just like, like, do you know what I mean? It just, like, everything through the fight week and this and that, I just literally just couldn't be bothered. So then it only really came to when I came back home. Everyone was like, do you know what? I think the facial hair kind of suits you. And then, you know, I started taking it all in and I'm thinking, do you know what? And then I started looking at myself and obviously with all the photos that they've done in the UFC, I'm like, do you know what? They might be onto something here. I think I might try and go for a new style. So then my girlfriend got like the one clippers and just started like giving it a little trim. And I think, to be honest, now this is how I'm going to be rocking out the little facial hair. Like I say, I think the baby face times are now, I'm going to have to go past me at this point.
So we're not going to go full on mountain man beard. We're just going to, you know, a little 5 o'clock shadow, but keep it looking straight.
That's it. We're going to go for the little shadow. Just give him a nice little bit of a tease of what it looked like. You know, do you know what I mean? Just give him a little bit of something. Don't give him too much. You know, you don't want to put it all out there in one go. So, yeah.
Well played, sir. Let's talk about the fight a little bit because Andreas, you know, he's moving up a weight class. He's a guy that comes out very, very hard, especially in that first round, always looking to finish the fight with every strike he throws. And you were very light on your feet. You were moving around pretty well. You guys are trading a lot of leg kicks. And then he goes for the takedown against the fence, and it was like deja vu from your last fight with Cage Warriors. Like, you started raining down those elbows and you had him badly, badly hurt as the horn sounded. Did you think after that horn sounded, after you landed those elbows, that the fight was just going to be over, seeing how he reacted to it?
No, I didn't think so. I mean, listen, I knew I landed some quite hard strikes. I mean, like, you know, there was like one or two where I literally felt probably mainly the first one was when I felt that, like, the proper connection and I saw him go down. But I thought, okay, he's a little bit dazed. This is why, when my dad came in with the stool as the door opened, he was just ready. Okay, we're going to the next round. Like, we've got to be ready to go. I was ready to turn it up in the second round because I felt like, you know, I was just sort of feeling my range. I wasn't feeling the range so well because he actually moved really quite well in the fight as well. So second round, I was getting ready to, like, really put it on him. And then I saw that he just wasn't getting up. And, you know, the referee asked for him to stand up about, you know, four or five times. And he was just very, like, non-responsive. Even when they took a chair in for him to sit down, once they called it off, like, he found it hard to sit down on the stool as well. So, yeah, like I said, I was just ready and prepared to go on to the second round. I had no thought that, you know, it was going to end there and there. That's why, you know, I had a bit of a scream, a little sigh of relief because, you know, that it finished, because I genuinely did not think that they were going to stop it right there and then.
Did you happen to see the incident with the cage door? Because after the round ends, he's leaning against it, the door opens and he kind of falls over, and the broadcasters thought that that's the reason why the fight was stopped anyways. But it looked like even after the fact, he was out of it, and it didn't look like he was going to continue. He didn't really argue with the fact that the fight was stopped. Did you notice that while you were sitting on the stool at all?
I didn't notice it then, but then when I watched it back and everything, I heard the commentary. Honest to God, mate, I felt like they put a little bit too much emphasis on this whole door opening situation. It had nothing to do with them stopping the fight, and the guy was completely dazed. Like I said, I didn't know that how badly hurt he was until I saw him after. I went to, like, obviously, send my well wishes and stuff after the fight, you know, going to shake his hand. And he was still out of it. Like, he was sort of like looking around, and like he was stumbling to get to, when I saw on the video after, he's stumbling to get to the seat. He was not fit to continue to the next round. That is what caused him not to go. When a referee asks you to stand up four times and you don't stand up, is that a sign that you're ready to fight? I don't think so. So, you know, the fact that, like I said, there was this whole fiasco about, oh, this door being opened, I have to admit, like, in my opinion, like, you know, throwing shade on the victory with this whole door opening situation, for me, I was like, well, you know, like, if the guy's not standing up, so, like, if it was me and I was okay and I'm good to fight, the referee asked me to stand up, okay, I might take like 1 or 2 seconds or whatever, like, he might ask me twice, but then I'll stand back up and then I'll at least walk to my corner and sit down, not literally on the floor there and then. So, the fact that he was unfit to get up afterwards is just an indication to how hurt he was, and that, you know, obviously 1 minute would not be enough to recover from that.
Do you feel like, in a way, that it sort of took away from the win itself, just talking about the door and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, listen, obviously they had a couple of things saying that it was the back of the head and this and that. You know, you can imagine I've been bombarded with messages from the other teams saying that, you know, and like, you know, people saying on social media about, you know, about hitting the back of the head and this and that. But like, you know, I know where the targeting points are that I need to hit in order to finish the fight. I'm not going to go purposely. And they're all saying 12 to 6. There was no 12 to 6 elbows. It didn't hit the back of the head. They're trying to find these little, you know, screenshots of me getting. But even then, you see in the screenshot, they all think it's the back of the head, but it's not the back of the head. They told us where the back of the head was. Like, a thin strip on the back of the head. Anything up here? And even saw, actually, because I don't know if it was the TV or something, I saw afterwards, there was bruising on the guy's head. All in the spot that is the legal lines for it to be in the area where it needs to be. It was all red in that area. There's no red on the back of the head or anything like that. So this is why, yeah, there was a lot of shade being thrown on those sort of things. And then, like I said, just a bit like a lot of emphasis on this door opening and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, look, it created something to talk about. It created some sort of, you know, controversy, or I guess you could say, or whatever. But like, you know, at the end of the day, the referee had to go in and step in and do his job. And he did his job. Like, you know, everything that the referee did was 100% what he had to do. He was watching those shots as well. Listen, if I was hitting the back of the head directly, he would say something as well. He was watching right there. He was literally right next to us when that whole incident happened. And listen, when he shot in for that takedown at the end of the fight, I got the underhook. I could have stopped the takedown. I could have chose just to stop the takedown and go into the second round. But I don't know how long was left in the round at that point anyways. But I'm like, my dad shouts to me, elbows, elbows, elbows. Of course, I'm just going to try and finish it there and then. Do you know what I mean? There was a choice of to go into the second round or to try and finish the fight there and then. And I obviously took the route of I wanted to finish the fight. But there's no way that I'm going to try and use illegal shots. I'm trying to hit to the correct spot. And even if like one catches in the back of the head because the guy's turning his head to get away from it, again, I can't stop that as I'm throwing and you turn. So, you know, there's a couple of things. But again, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, I talk to my team and everything like that and as well. Like, I don't let it get to me at the end of the day. I mean, listen, they wouldn't give me a 50 grand bonus if I wasn't doing it in the right spots anyway. So, you know, like I say, there's all these talks and these things and stuff like that. But I think as time goes on and things clear up, I mean, look, let them talk. People are talking about me at the end of the day. And listen, good or bad or whatever, it's publicity. And I'll take that because it's going to make people more interested to see me fight in my next fight.
I thought the production team and the broadcast did a great job kind of showing everything, because it was probably the most confusing end to a round that I've ever seen, because no one knew what had happened. He was down. There were talks about the back of the head. They were saying, you know, maybe you hit him after the horn. And then they went in and showed the replays and it showed that none of that was the fact. And then they showed an even better angle of the elbows landing. And it didn't seem like any of them landed on the back of the head. So I think they did a great job showing that. But at the end of the day, like you said, and I'm using your at the end of the day here, pretty good list of accomplishments for your first night at the office. It was a short night. You got a finish and you got a bonus. Can't get better than that, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. It's crazy. And I got to add to that point, obviously, yeah, the broadcasting team did a very good job, especially like, you know, sort of analyzing things afterwards and yeah, like showing that everything was all good and stuff like that. But yeah, you know, when I had the, my whiteboard written at home, you know, saying that I was going to win, you know, I had written that I was going to win the second, but again, everything I've been writing down on this board, this magical board that I have out here, we're going to call it the Mystic Board now. Do you know what I mean? And everything that I wrote on there has come true. And I've had two things that are yet to come true, but I know that in the future they will happen. So, you know, to win the 50 grand bonus, and I said it this whole time. I told people, I said, bet on me. I'm going to win the bonus. And I told my dad as well, because it's my stepmom's birthday coming up and my dad's birthday. I told him, like, listen, I'm going to win you guys a 50 grand bonus. And that, for me, that was a big thing to be able to give that to my parents, because they've been doing so much for me. And, you know, helping me in the lead up to this fight. I want to be able to give back. I want to be able to make things easier for them. So, you know, like, that made the win even more sweet. Do you know what I mean? Like, the fact that you go in there, you go over the finish, you get the 50 grand bonus, everything comes to fruition, and you're also able to help your loved ones at the end of the day. So, yeah, like you said, it couldn't have gone any better.
That's fantastic, man. What are the other two things on the board, if you don't mind me asking?
So one of them was to have three fights by the end of the year, and the second thing was to win all three. So, I mean, listen, those points could very well happen. And like I say, I mean, after this week, I'll be back into training. I'll be back ready to go and you know, waiting on a call from my manager to let me know my next fight, hopefully on the next fight island. So I know they've got a lot of guys on their roster and stuff like that. But like I say, I'm ready to bring some more excitement and entertainment to the table, because, you know, even going into this fight, I seem to have some sort of, you know, routine of getting myself injured close to the fight. But, you know, I had bursitis, which then got, you know, in my left knee, and my knee was blown up massively, like literally 2 weeks before the fight. And then it got infected whilst I was out there, and then it slowly calmed down and we had to like physio it. So all that was like sort of playing in the back of my mind at the same time. Like, you know, it made, you know, like I say, I feel like I've still got more to show. I've still got more to show, but I'm happy that I haven't shown it yet, because I know 100% every fight I'm just going to keep getting better. I felt it how it is underneath those big lights, felt how it is being in the UFC and stuff like that, wearing the gloves, doing everything. And now I'm ready to just go and do more. Now that I've had that experience, like, and even the nerves I felt like, you know, like were not as like high as they normally are, even like now I feel that I can control it and use that fire even more now, especially if I go into a fight with full health and full capability. And like I said, I just can't wait for that.
Thinking, but what, September, October-ish in that time frame?
Yeah, roughly. Yeah. If I can get something in September, October, and then like I say, maybe hopefully finish something in December if they have anything going on, mate, I'm ready to fight. I'm a fighter. I'm training all the time. I'm always in shape. And as long as I have no injuries, I'm ready to keep fighting.
It's been a good little stretch for not just you, but the division as a whole, because people say when they think about 205, we need new stars, we need new contenders, we got to shake things up a little bit. And you don't strike me as the call-out type, Modestus, but this is a division in the UFC that is looking for guys to jump up the ladder. We saw guys like Yuri Prochazka have a great performance. Roman Dolidze had a great performance on Saturday. What makes sense for you moving forward? Does it matter to you?
At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I mean, I could fight whoever they want to give me. Like I say, I would like to still face Vinicius. Obviously, that fight hasn't been played out. So, you know, I hope he rests and recovers and he's okay. I mean, listen, as well, I mean, I saw these other guys. I mean, you know, Prochazka, he's quite high up in the rankings now. He fought a very tough opponent in Ozdemir and he came out on top. So he's going to be looking at fighting guys within that, you know, sort of top five sort of bracket and stuff like that. So that's not a fight that I think would happen anytime soon. But obviously, it's something that I would want to look forward to in the future. But, you know, like a fight with Dolidze, who had like a really good debut also, I think that would be an interesting matchup. You know what I mean? So there's plenty of like really good, interesting matchups at like heavyweight now. There's so like, you know, a wealth of talent, guys coming up, you know, guys that have just fought that they could put together and stuff like that. So, you know, like I'm just working to fight every single fight, go up the ladder and try and get myself into that top 15, top 10 sort of ranking, keep gaining confidence, keep gaining experience. And work towards getting that UFC belt, which is, you know, the dream of every fighter in this division.
So I co-host a matchmaker podcast for the site that we just launched earlier this week. And it's myself and my colleague, Alex K. Lee. And we make these wild card picks for each card. And his wild card pick, I wanted to throw this suggestion at you, when he's ready to come back, we have a Striker's Delight matchup between you and Gokhan Saki. That would check off all the boxes for you. What do you think of that?
Yeah. No, 100%, mate. Like, look, at the end of the day, I'm all open to options, man. I'm all open to options. I want to face the best athletes in the world. I want to face all the top competition. And like I say, whatever my manager feels is the best sort of, you know, avenue for me to go down, you know, it's a business at the end of the day. So, yeah, whatever sort of comes up, obviously, that's a very interesting matchup, like you said. I'm just very interested to fight all different styles and to fight all different matchups and stuff like that and really test myself and put myself, you know, really get myself to be that best fighter in the division. And like I say, the more I fight all different styles and body shapes and types, you know, the better I can work up the way up my ladder and, you know, solidify myself within those top rankings. So, yeah, man, like I say, that's a great suggestion. And yeah, I'm sure my manager will hear about it as well. And then, yeah, we'll see what is the next, you know, best move for me, you know, whenever that conversation comes about.
Well, it was quite an introduction, Modestus, to the UFC fans. Congratulations on the win. We definitely look forward to seeing what's next for you. And the good juju here continues, Modestus. I feel like ever since these conversations started, it's just been off to the races, you know?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I always enjoy speaking to you, brother. Like, we always have a good time. Like I said, there's going to be plenty more interviews and plenty more good times to go ahead.
Looking forward to it, man. Thank you again.
Nice one. Thank you so much, bro.
A lot of promising things in the career of Modestus Bukauskas and the 205-pound division. This Fight Island thing, the cool thing about it, I mean, it's been cool across the board. We talked a lot about it on Between the Links, but we're starting to see some new stars, at least the potential of new stars, emerge a little bit. We're starting to see some names come out of the woodwork that fighters and fans want to see more of, and I think this is great. So if we find any sort of under-the-radar storyline, and we've had some big storylines, but I think the emergence of some of these newcomers, some of these people that fans, especially in America, are seeing for the first time, it's been a very successful part of this trip to Abu Dhabi for the UFC as we put a bow on another episode of What the Heck. Thank you to everyone who joined me this week. Thank you to all of you guys watching and listening, wherever you're watching or listening. So make sure you subscribe wherever you're doing so. And that's it. We got some exciting things like we talked about at the top of the program. Lots of mixed martial arts action. Titan FC tonight. We got LFA and the return of Bellator tomorrow. And then the UFC, which is the longest event of all time. 15 fights, 7-fight main card going down Saturday. I am excited for that one. There's a lot of really good matchups headlined by Robert Whittaker taking on Darren Till. Big thank you to Casey Lydon on the production, Esther Lynn on the graphics. We're out of here. The ranting is done. I am Mike Heck. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, have a heck of a week, everybody.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.